On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we dig into some spring training spice. Famous players are saying interesting things in front of microphones. But how interesting? Let us tell you in front of our microphones. The San Diego Padres are doing transactions, finally, in an off-season ending edition of the Scobo Scobo for you, coming up here now. What's up, everybody? Like 5 minutes after we stopped recording, news broke that the president of the Major League Baseball Players Association, the head of the union, Tony Clark, I believe his exact title is executive director, is executive director no more. He is resigning. This news reported by The Athletic and ESPN. The reasons for this are very hazy right now. This is literally like new. Because Jordan is on his way to spring training, you will not hear us talk about it on this episode. We'll talk about it on Friday. All I can say right now is that this is stunning. This is out of nowhere. People with the union were operating as business as usual for spring training. Clark and the union have been under federal investigation by the Eastern District of New York about like financial improprieties, but it did not seem like that situation had reached this point yet. He was supposed to hold a meeting at Guardians camp this morning. That meeting was canceled. Obviously the collective bargaining agreement expires at the end of this year. This is massive news for the future of the sport. And we will talk about it once we have more information on Friday. So that is why you will not hear us discuss it on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't get motivated when its boss says that we're not elite. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And I guess we only find out if we become elite or continue to simply be good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Maybe there's only one way to find out, right? We get mostly positive feedback here internally from the good folks at Yahoo. We've been very happy with our time here. But yeah, maybe if they really want to push us to the next level of podcasting, they should just kind of let us know that we're losing it.
That's true. We're happy, certainly happier than Bryce Harper. And that will be one of the main topics on today's episode. It is Tuesday, February 17th. Jordan Schusterman is still at spring training. Don't have a ton of major news. However, around this time of year, okay, at the beginning of spring training, last week was injury week. This week is important position players get in front of a microphone and do large scrum week. And for that reason, we have some spicy quotes that we're going to parse through. That is our opener. Now, if you've listened to us for a while, we tend to make molehills out of mountains more than mountains out of molehills. I think that most of the time, what players say means significantly less than what players do. Actions, as it is oft said, speak louder than words. But what we're going to do here is we're going to go through some of these spring training headlines, and we're going to try and see how spicy is this in reality? How meaningful are these various disagreements that have bubbled up during everybody's return to the baseball world?
I think what's so fun about these, and we'll talk about how we're going to go ahead and grade these spice levels in a second, is that, as you mentioned, that this is, you know, first week of full squad workouts, and I've been bouncing around these camps and been in some of these scrums. So this is an opportunity for the players to talk and to share what's on their mind. But in a lot of cases, these are kind of just a back and forth that just, you know, check the box. How was your offseason? What did you do? Did you relax? What are you working on? for the most part, and there are some where like something happened over the offseason where we need to talk and ask the player about it. And our first topic, Bryce Harper, certainly qualifies for that. But in a lot of other cases, players are sometimes going out of their way to say something more interesting than they even need to. And as baseball podcasters, we are so grateful. So we're going to go through some of these and talk about how spicy they are. And for me, spice level is when I read the quote, watched the clip, I was like, didn't think he was going to say that. Or like that.
It's like
that
when you broke, eat.
Wow.
When you take a bite of something and it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I wasn't now, expecting it to have that kind of kick.
How much does any of this like mean for the future of any of these teams in the short or long term? We can talk about that. But we're just digging into like when we heard them say this, like, how do we feel? And we keep mentioning spice. Well, you've have a level of spice tolerance that is higher than mine. You're probably familiar with the Scoville scale.
Not the Scobo meter.
Not the Scobo. We're going to get to Scobo later. No, Scoville, of course, which measures the amount of capsaicin. You know what capsaicin is? That's the essentially the compound chemical. I don't know how you'd say that
in a pepper. Ask your wife.
That is why things are spicy. And so there's a lot of different sources online that will kind of rank different peppers by how hot they are and where they are in the Scoville meter. The bottom, of course, being bell peppers, which I can handle. I love bell peppers. Those are great. That's zero. That's zero.
On you can handle. Meter. You can handle a bell pepper. Wow. Get a load of this guy.
A little bit higher. You know, you go to the top. Carolina Reaper is probably the most mainstream, like, yeah. Oh my God, you know, my mouth is on fire. That is roughly, according to several sources, between 1.5, 2.3 million on the Scoville scale.
That would have been a great nickname for Corey Seager because he's so unspicy and from North Carolina. If we had called him the Carolina Reaper, I wish we could build a time machine and go back and change that. Okay, let's begin in Clearwater, where the Philadelphia Phillies do their spring training. And the headline here is Bryce Harper infuriated with President of Baseball Operations, Dave Dombrowski. The context here is that in Dave Dombrowski's end of season press conference, when asked about Bryce Harper, Dombrowski said, quote, "He didn't have an elite season like he has had in the past. And I guess we only find out if he becomes elite or if he continues to be good." Harper, given the opportunity to respond, well, we should also say, over the winter, Bryce Harper seen wearing a t-shirt that said not elite on it.
Also, he did respond at the time, right? A friend of the show, Matt Gelb, I believe, reached out and got some much more brief comments, I think via text, or maybe they did talk about whatever. There, we have heard from Bryce about this. However, this is a different level. And also, it's now been months, right? So in theory, he could have just had addressed this at a time and then moved on. And when he was asked about this, he could have said, you know what? That was a few months ago. I'm excited for the season, blah, blah, blah.
But nope, that's not what he decided to say.
Nope.
That is not what Bryce said. Bryce Harper said, quote, "I don't get motivated by that kind of stuff. For me, it was wild, the whole situation happening. The big thing for me was when we first met with this organization, it was, hey, we're always going to keep things in-house and we expect you to do the same thing. So when that didn't happen, it kind of took me for a run a little bit. Obviously, I didn't have the year I wanted. Obviously, I didn't have the postseason I wanted. My numbers weren't where they needed to be. I know that, and I don't need to be motivated to be great in my career or anything else. That's just not a motivating factor for me. For Dave to come out and say those things, it's kind of wild." Spice level, Jordan.
This is pretty good. I'm looking at one of the scales we found, and again, depends if you're like a pepper expert, you're going to be like, "Come on, guys, that's a terrible pick." But this is like above average spice for me. I don't know if this is going to be the hottest one we have, but I'm looking at, you know, habanero between 100, 300 Scoville, maybe a little bit higher. I mean, it's not quite ghost pepper, but this is spicy.
So, what is interesting about this to me is that Bryce Harper can say this type of stuff doesn't motivate me, but I still think it does. Like it still kind of does, right? You can say I don't care all you want, but like if Bryce Harper goes out and has a 6-WAR season, like, people will say Dave Dombrowski masterclass, right? Neg your player to the All-Star game. Now, I do think what is most telling here is that Dombrowski did misstep in some regard. Okay? And he, by not doing this directly to Harper behind the scenes, that seems to have wronged Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper feels wronged by that decision, right? I think it is also interesting that Dave Dombrowski, who is not a newbie, who is not a dummy, felt the need to do this publicly. And that tells me that there is some sort of disconnect between Harper and Dombrowski, that they are not operating on the same page. And the face of the franchise and the president of baseball operations should probably be on the same page. Do I think this will change his future with the team? Not really. Is this less than ideal? Absolutely. And I think it probably says a little bit more about Harper's status within the organization than anything else.
So let's get to that point. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I actually want to follow up on that. What do you mean by that last point about status in the organization? Because I read this, and the thing I've been thinking about throughout this whole thing is Bryce is kind of looking at the situation and being like, you know what? Like, I'm going to be here longer than Dave. So I'm going to speak my mind. This is my team. And
but it's
the other
not.
Funny
That's
thing about
thing.
It.
Dude, yeah, but no, yeah. No, no, no. It's yeah. His city, but it's not really his team anymore, because it's Schwarber's team. Schwarber's coming off a better season. Schwarber runs the room. Schwarber's the one who just got extended. I believe at this point their contracts end the same season. Like they are under contract, I believe, for the same amount of time.
I can check that.
And while Bryce Harper is going to have, when it's all said and done, a better career and be more important culturally than Kyle Schwarber, I think within the context of this organization, Kyle Schwarber like has much, if not more, sauce internally than Bryce Harper. That's not a bad thing necessarily. Bryce Harper is not being paid all this money to be a clubhouse needle mover, right? He's being paid to go yard. Kyle Schwarber, part of the value with him is that he is a difference maker behind the scenes in that regard. I don't think that's a bad thing with Bryce. Just because you're really good at baseball doesn't mean you're like a leader of men necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there was another quote where Schwarber or Harper said that he thought Schwarber was going to go to Cincinnati, which was very odd for him to say. Maybe he didn't really believe that, but anybody who's been around the Phillies at all pretty much understood that Schwarber was always coming back, that the money was always going to be paid to get Schwarber to stay. And I think it's weird that either Bryce didn't know that or is pretending he didn't know that.
Strong agree. One clarification, Bryce's contract still goes 1 more year farther than Schwarber, but the point is they are going to be in the same place. And it is an interesting what if what Bryce thought was going to happen happened, does it revert to an even larger spotlight on Bryce? But because of all this, we are going to be talking about Bryce Harper this year in a way that, honestly, last year we weren't that much, and maybe we should have been. Maybe this is part of what Dave Dombrowski was talking about. Last thing I want to mention about Dombrowski, and then we can talk about one more Bryce Harper quote here, because he gave us a lot to work with, is Bryce saying, like, when I joined this organization, they said, we're going to keep things in-house. I don't know, man. Dave Dombrowski kind of just tells everybody what's going on. Like that, I know that I know what he means, and I believe him that when they met, that's a goal for most, if not all, organizations. But if you wanted a GM that wasn't going to like shoot straight
with
the
Braves,
public,
if you cared the most about keeping
options.
Things in house, if that mm-hmm. was priority number mm-hmm. one, Alex Anthopoulos is the goat at keeping things in house.
Yeah, and there's part of me that also is like coming off the Castellanos stuff. Like, is this just like on his mind? Like, how all of this has kind of gotten to where it was? Either way, I thought that was funny just in relation to Dombrowski. But one more Bryce thing here.
But just quickly, I'd like to hop in and just say one more point. Like Dombrowski, whether or not he should have said what he said in the way that he said it, was right. He was right. Bryce Harper sleepwalked.
It's a tough one.
Through the 2025 season. And because he's Bryce Harper, because he's a great baseball player, he was still pretty good. But I don't think you can watch Bryce Harper's at-bats and general demeanor from last year and say that he was as locked in every day as he'd been in years past. Is the way that Dombrowski handled it the best way to handle it? Probably not. But he is right. You know, he's certainly not wrong. I'll leave it at that. The other interesting quote was Bryce Harper was asked about the WBC, because remember, he's playing for Team USA for the first time. And he said, quote, having Aaron Judge hit behind me is going to be a lot of fun. And after Bryce said that, the gaggle of reporters giggled, which is funnier than any other thing that happened here, because Bryce was not kidding. All right. One of two things is true. Either USA manager Mark DeRosa already talked to Bryce and told him the lineup and he's hitting second and Judge is hitting third. That's a possibility. Or Bryce is just like saying, this is what I think the lineup will be and Judge will hit behind me. Either way, Bryce is not joking about like, oh, you know, he's so much better than me, but I'm going to hit in front of him. This is not like if Ernie Clement said, having Aaron Judge hitting behind me is going to be a lot of fun. That's a joke. Right? That's a guy who's kidding. But Bryce is not kidding.
Yeah. And I don't want to read too much into the laughter at the time, because again, being in these scrums, like that's the kind of throwaway line that people might just kind of chuckle at. But I absolutely believe that Bryce Harper either knows or believes he's hitting in front of Judge. That I am certain of. And whether or not it actually happens, we are going to work. We got plenty of WBC preview stuff coming up, and Team USA lineup is a fun one to try and construct. There's definitely a version of the lineup where you could look at it with Bryce Harper hitting second and Judge hitting third, and you're like, yeah, okay. But partially because of what we just talked about, Bryce Harper had one of the worst seasons of anyone that is projected to start for Team USA. So make of that what you will. That doesn't mean he's going to be batting eighth, but it does probably mean that he might, maybe shouldn't have to be hitting more times than Judge or Raleigh or his pal Kyle Schwarber. So anyway, we will see how that all shakes out, but that Bryce giving us plenty of spice. All right, let's move on to the New York Mets, where the headline, and by the way, when we say the headline, these are our stupid headlines. This is not, I mean, maybe you saw these actual headlines somewhere, but this is just us.
No, I'm doing this.
Okay. All right, just being clear. Steve Cohen, you know him? He owns the Mets. Steve Cohen says, I'm the captain now. I'm him. No one will be a captain on the team while I'm around. Here is the quote. That is basically what the quote is.
Put a C on my quarter zip.
As long as I'm owning the team, there will never be a team captain. That was my decision. My view is the locker room is unique and let the locker room sort it out year in, year out. There'll never be a captain. I've felt that way all along. Before we get to how spicy this is, do you agree with the premise? Like, I actually don't hate the idea, but I also think it is a pretty aggressive stance. So
it's an unnecessarily aggressive stance for sure. There will never be a captain as long as I'm in town. I'm in charge. Yes, with you. This happened when I was in college, where we had like a group of guys who were like the leaders of the team. And then this other guy emerged as a leader, and we just were like, well, we have to add him as captain, right? You know what I mean? And so it is awkward to have someone officially be the captain. Now, this is obviously stemming from discussions with Lindor, where people were like, is Lindor going to be the captain? Or are they going to put a C on Lindor's chest? And at the time last spring, they didn't, in part because it would have really pissed off like Brandon Nimmo and McNeil and Pete Alonso, all these other guys who've been around. They're all gone, right? And so if they were to make Lindor the captain right now, I think it would be a reasonable, defensible thing to do. I understand why Steve Cohen doesn't want to do it. And you know what I think is the true motivating factor here? What team do you associate with captaincy in baseball more than any other?
Not the Mets.
Not the Mets, the New York Yankees. And I think that this is smart from Steve Cohen to be like, the Yankees do captains. We win ball games.
Yeah.
Now, last year, that wasn't necessarily the case.
No. Nope.
You know, at all.
No.
Nope. But this is, I think, the spice level on this for me. It's a poblano. Yeah, you could okay. stuff it. You could eat it the whole. It's unnecessarily authoritative.
Yes.
Right?
But he is the authority. So what are you going to do?
Sure.
Like, this is part of it. He gets to say that. But I agree with you. I'm with you. He had another quote. Of course, anytime you're talking to an owner, you got to ask him about the Dodgers. Although, I was there when Tom Ricketts spoke yesterday, and shockingly, nobody asked him about the Dodgers. They did ask him about, you know, the lockout, and he was like, well, enjoy the baseball while we have it. But
does he know that he kind of looks like Ted Cruz?
That also did not come up, but I have to imagine by now he is quite familiar with that take. Steve Cohen said when asked about the Dodgers, quote, they're formidable. They have the ability to spend. So do I, by the way. And that got a great chuckle from the press corps, who are like, oh, Steve Cohen, you are so rich. You really are so rich. But it's true. He can't spend. But Steve Cohen is a fascinating character. How much is he going to tweet this year? That's what I care about. All right. Speaking of the captain, let's go to Aaron Judge. Headline, Aaron Judge was freaking out earlier in the Yankees offseason. He was getting impatient. Why weren't they making big moves? Quote, it was brutal. Early on, it was pretty tough to watch. I'm like, man, we're the New York Yankees. Let's go out there and get the right people. He goes on. He's talking about how all of his teammates from last year were free agents. Obviously, Grisham first, but then Bellinger, Goldschmidt, and even Ahmed Rosario. He continues, quote, let's sign Paul Blackburn, quote, let's sign these guys right now and start adding more pieces because I'm seeing other teams around the league get better. They're making trades. They're signing big prospects or big players. Are they signing big prospects? Is Judge talking about like...
He misspoke. No, he misspoke. He's not talking about like... I know you're thinking, oh, the international stuff going on with the Yankees and Wendy Austin. No, he misspoke. It's not... He's not thinking about the international market. He's not frustrated that like Francisco Renteria signed with the Phillies. Okay, that's not what this is.
But what if he does? Anyway, continues... The quote, and we're sitting there for a while kind of making smaller moves. Dang, shots fired. And then he was also asked, like, so, hey, did you like
Yarbrough
say anything about this? Did you like give Brian Cashman a call and be like, hey, so why have we not signed anybody? Like, I don't know who Cade Winquist is. And Judge was like, huh? Yeah. He smiled and kind of was like, no, I did. He's like, yeah, I did. Quote, it was frustrating, but I think, you know, now that all these guys are back, and Ryan Weathers is there, and Max Schumann. Quote, it was frustrating, but I think we're right where we need to be. So, I am, again, in terms of like import, does this actually impact the season? Remember, like Judge is signed long term, so it's not like we're worried about him. It's not like an NBA discussion where you're like with Giannis, it's like, well, can they build a championship team around him? I don't know. He might get traded. He might not. He's going to ask for a trade. Like, no, that's not what we're talking about here. But at the same time, this is a perfect example of a question where Aaron Judge could have skipped to the end of the quote and been like, hey, you know, like we're all back. Bellinger's here. We're excited. We got a great team. And we would not be talking about it on the podcast because that would be the most boring quote ever. Instead, he went out of his way to be like, no, I was like all the other Yankees fans who were looking around saying, what are we doing? Why are we doing nothing? And because of that, I'm going to say that this is, I mean, by Judge standards, like this is way up there. I mean, I'm looking, I don't know what kind of pepper this is, but this is pretty high up there. Not just a habanero, a red Savina habanero. This is over 350,000 Scovilles. I mean, this is kind of adjusted. This is like Judge Plus, Spice Plus adjusted for Judge never saying anything that interesting. But I thought this was like really transparent, and I appreciated the honesty. So I like this one.
A couple different thoughts here for me. One, I'm sure it is somewhat refreshing for Yankees fans to know that Aaron Judge is taking in the offseason in the way that they are, where Yankees fans for 2 months were like, what? Why aren't we doing anything? And Aaron Judge was doing it the same way. We both went to Jewish high school, and there was this like concept that we were taught when studying the Old Testament, right? The Torah, that every word in the Torah is in there for a reason, right? Now, whether or not that's true, who knows? But every word exists and it is participating in the text for a reason. It all has meaning. It all matters. And the only person about whom I feel that way in baseball is Aaron Judge. It's more conceptually than the actual words, right? But like, if Aaron Judge chooses to say something, that is a thought out decision in a way, right? Because he is so savvy and so good about interacting with the media that he can just flip on the Jeter, I'm the most boring man in the world, and here's my smile that everyone likes, and it's fine. So for him to go out of his way to say this, I think was indeed pretty spicy. And the part of it that sticks with me is where he goes, I'm like, man, we're the New York Yankees. Let's go out there and get the right people. The New York Yankees might be the British Empire at its end. Like, the New York Yankees are not the New York Yankees in the same way they were. That's what the Dodgers are now, right? The torch has been passed. The Mets and Dodgers are running a higher payroll than the Yankees. And I can imagine that for Aaron Judge, a man who has given his life to this organization, who believes in the sanctity and the superiority of all things pinstriped, that it is difficult to watch your organization be the bronze medalist, right? And not even to be the bronze medalist to finish third, to not even participate in the big storylines of the winter, right? To not even like be in the Edwin Diaz discussion or the Kyle Tucker discussion or whomever. I can understand that for Aaron Judge, that's not necessarily what he expected or what he signed up for or the Yankees he was raised beneath, you know? And so I do think that this is like significant because it reveals the way that Judge is thinking about the Yankees' place in the baseball landscape in a way that we don't often get to see.
Also just relatable. I think not that his approval rating with Yankees fans needed a boost, but I have to think that they were like, yes, yes, thank you. Of all the people that were feeling the same way, it is nice to know that he felt the same way. All right, another category of spring training introductory topics is, hey, what position are you going to play this year? Maybe because of the roster. Or you have been reportedly working on a change.
You know, when you meet like, you know, a family friend's 8-year-old kid or something and they play baseball and you're like, what position do you play? And like, oh, well, I'm a catcher and a shortstop and first base and pitch and left field. Right. It's a similar question to like, hey, Yordan Alvarez, what position do you play?
Well, in this case, we have two topics, which is what position do you not play? So let's start with the Atlanta Braves, where Jurickson Profar, who had one of the stranger seasons of any player last year. Let's recall, Jurickson Profar breaks out in a shocking way with the San Diego Padres. He signs a contract with the Atlanta Braves. He immediately gets suspended for PEDs. And we were like, well, that is an unfortunate sequence and a bit of timing for many reasons, both looking backwards and forwards. And then by the time he came back from his suspension, the Braves season was lost. And so even though Jurickson Profar then like, was pretty good for the rest of the year, nobody cared and people were understandably still probably pretty irked with him. Fast forward to spring training 2026, Jurickson Profar is on the team. He is an important hitter on this team. However, because of the signing of Mike Yastrzemski over the offseason, who is a very, we've talked about it, like a good hitter and also a pretty decent outfielder, even at age 35, there's a look, you look at the lineup and you say, hey, Jurickson Profar, I think you're going to DH. What do you think about that? And Jurickson Profar, when asked about this, was kind of like, I'm not loving that. Quote, I don't know. Let's see. And if you, this is the one where you really got to watch the clip.
I have to watch the video.
You got to watch the video. Allison Mastrangelo, who of course covers the Braves down there, she posted the clip on Twitter, and you can watch it, and you can just feel his discomfort, right? I mean,
he's just going
like he's wincing big time. So I don't. In this case, that tells me more than what he's even saying. Eventually, he's like, yeah, I'll do whatever the team needs to win, which, of course, for the guy that just got suspended, is probably what you should have been saying to start the quote.
You better.
But, yeah. Now, I was like, has Jurickson Profar literally never DH'd ever? And that's not true. Like, he has some experience doing it, but clearly he did not have a good time when he was last DHing regularly. And as such, he believes I should be in the outfield. I will feel better doing that. And sorry, bud, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think you're going to be DHing. I think you're going to have to get used to this, and we will see how that goes.
This is different than the one we're about to talk about with Yordan, because Jurickson Profar has not earned the right to be frustrated with where he's playing, because his entire status as a baseball player is on very thin ice, in my opinion, because we can legitimately challenge how, quote, real it is, considering the timing of his PED suspension, how that kind of really hurt the Braves season last year, how bad he is at defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you were better at defense than Mike Yastrzemski, you wouldn't be being asked to DH. Yordan Alvarez, at the other hand, who, like, look, Yordan Alvarez is never going to win a gold glove as a defender. He is a hulking, massive lad. He's not as bad at defense as you think. He's certainly not good, but because Houston's left field is so small and weird, he's not enough of a detriment out there that you can't put him in left. The reason the Astros want to put him in left field is because they don't want him to get hurt, because he gets hurt a lot. And so when he was asked about this, about DHing all the time, he said, quote, it depends on how you look at it. I've never gotten hurt playing left field. Good point. It's true.
He has had a lot of injuries, but they have not taken place while he has been playing in the outfield. And so in his mind, and he, this is in his quote, of course, you know, translated, but that is a good way to put it. It does depend how you look at it, right? Because you could still say, well, I mean, risk is still higher if you are running around out there with two surgically repaired knees and all these other injuries that could be exposed if you are, you know, playing the outfield. But this is just also a vehicle to talk about the fact that the Astros roster still makes no sense. They traded Jesus Sanchez to the Blue Jays like immediately after our last podcast. That was more of a move to clear his salary for the production that he was giving them. They bring back Joey Loperfido. So great. Now you've swapped an older outfielder for a younger one, a cheaper one, but yeah, you still have not solved this infield glut that is contributing to the DH at bats that would may or may not be going to Isak Paredes or Yordan Alvarez or Jose Altuve, et cetera, et cetera. So,
here's my take on this.
Yeah.
Ready for my take on this?
Yeah, go ahead.
This is the spiciest one. Okay. This is the spiciest one. And here's why. Because Yordan Alvarez knows that the best version of the 2026 Astros from a positional perspective probably includes him playing left field, right? Like, if Yordan's playing left, it clears up the DH, Isak Paredes can DH, and the roster makes more sense if he's playing left field. And so what he's really saying here, if you, you know, look at the second level, he's saying, what is our general manager doing? This roster makes no sense. Yeah, I'll play left field. I don't get hurt out there. I want to win. And so for that reason, I think this is sneaky spicy, certainly spicier than the Profar one. Okay, let's finish up.
We're just going to do Trout. We're going to do Trout, and then we're going to take a break because this is also position related. So Mike Trout gave his annual spring training. Hey, I'm Mike Trout. I'm still here. Still at Angels camp. Woohoo!
I got to do the hat.
I was not
right.
There.
The way that Mike Trout does his hat when he does his press conferences.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's kind of like pointed down. Yeah, it's with the head.
Yeah,
the
it's like lit,
but yeah,
that,
that's
head.
Trout. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll know what we're talking about.
It looks like he's about to go on foul territory.
Trout, of course, you know, when Trout speaks, you know, everybody listens, no matter how injured he is or irrelevant the Angels are. He's one of the greatest players of all time. So when he talks, we pay attention. And another thing, it's like, hey, Trout, how you feeling? Are you feeling you're going to be healthier this year? Are you going to get back to playing some more outfield? Last year, notably, he did not play any center field. He played right field and mostly DH'd. And, like, played a good amount of baseball. Like, it wasn't 162 games, but he played 130 games last season. 130 games for Mike Trout last season. And was not that good. 1.5 baseball reference WAR. That makes me sad. Anyway, quote, when asked about, hey, so what's the plan for you on defense this year? And he says, I'm going to play center. I want to play center again. Oh, okay. Quote, honestly, I felt like when I was in center, it was less on my body than in the corners. To be honest, right field, I felt like I was running a lot. But it's just like a preference thing. Talking to some other outfielders, and they're saying that they feel the same way sometimes. Center is less on your legs.
This is not true. This makes no sense at all. Maybe Mike Trout just wants to play center field and wants to like justify that. And that's okay. He's Mike Trout. He does what he wants. When you're in center field, any ball that's hit to the outfield, you are breaking. Like you're making a read on and you're probably taking a few hard steps. Because when you're in center, center is like in the middle of it, everything, right? And so you have to move to your right and your left, right? If you're in left field, you are getting the ball way less often than when you are in center field. You are involved in fewer chances. That is why the best player is in center field. This does not make sense. If someone is like a biomechanist and thinks that Trout is actually right about this, please let me know. There is no chance that that is the case. Jordan Schusterman, what do you think?
I mostly agree with you. I think that center field, yes, is, you know, you're covering more ground. You're covering both. You're ranging in both directions. Higher leverage plays maybe for gaps and farther in center field than in the corners. A lot of reasons why center fielders are the better ones than the corner outfielders. But I don't know. I mean, maybe he just happened to have a lot of balls hit to him in right more than were being hit to him in center. I don't know. The point is, it's what you said first, which is that, dude, you're Mike Trout. Just be like, you know what? I'm Mike Trout. This is still my team. We're still like, I'm going to play center field. Yeah. And I would be like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. I mean, I hope he doesn't now get hurt playing center field, which
I mean, this bums me out. But at this point, the Angels are just Mike Trout. Like fantasy camp, this team is not good, and he should just get to do whatever he wants, you know.
So, anyway, weird, but I don't know. Okay, let's just go right now before we take a break. How many games is Mike Trout playing center field this year?
Man, this is tough for Bryce Teodosio, but man, I wish he was from South Philly or South Jersey. Bryce Teodosio, let's do. Let's do 43.
Ooh, okay. I'll take the over. I think he's gonna run out there and play center field. I don't know if he's gonna play that many games, but I think it's gonna be more than that. Because I do think that Kurt Suzuki is not gonna be like, I'm in charge. Mike Trout's like, guess who's under contract for way longer?
You have a 1-year deal, Kurt.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. All right, we're gonna take a break and we return to San Diego Padres.
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's go around the league. Better late than never. The San Diego Padres are transacting.
Still no trades, which is super disappointing. We speculated, would AJ Preller finally make a Preller style, here are some prospects I scrounged up from rookie ball give me your good major leaguer. Or in a lot of recent cases, here are all of our best prospects for short-term solutions. We're the Padres. That's what we do. But no, instead, he has been active on the free agent market. And also, he has been active reportedly signing an extension. There were some questions leading into camp. Would this Padres team extend AJ Preller amidst a potentially soon transition out of the ownership level? Let's move that to the side for now and focus on the baseball team, because they have brought in Nick Castellanos, who we talked about, of course, at the end last week's episode. They signed Herman Marquez, who we are incredibly excited to see has found a home. They signed Griffin Canning, who we had on our top 50 free agents after he was sneaky solid for the Mets last season before he injured his Achilles. They also add minor league deals for Ty France, former Padre, came up in their organization. And talk about spice, Walker Buehler joining the mix on a minor league deal. I will be, I believe I will be in Padres camp today. I'm definitely going to Mariners. We'll see if I have time to pop over to the other side of Peoria. But this is one heck of a string of transactions. No, it is not a lot of money for any of these guys. But we could talk for a while about all of these signings. But let's kind of think about it all together, this late push for some major league depth, which we have all kind of seen the Padres needing the whole winter, right? This is a team that has some serious star power at the top, and it falls off in a way that makes it very difficult to believe they could make it through a full season without weathering some injuries that could make their roster perilously thin. Which of these moves, you know, gets your attention the most? I mean, we've talked a lot about Castellanos. I literally said it last week, like the Padres are where he's going to go. That was not because I knew it was going to happen. It was because it was the only place that made any sense. And sure enough, he's on the Padres now.
Yeah, the Padres' depth sucks. And it has sucked for many years. And that is because they trade away most of their prospects. And so when they're bringing people up through, like, there just aren't competent minor leaguers in the upper minors to go and fill those spots. And that's how you end up with a pretty weak, you know, depth situation. And I think that these moves, as unsexy as they are sexy versions of unsexy moves, if that makes sense, right? Like, Nick Castellanos is not going to play every day, and that's fine. Like, for what they're going to ask him to do, that's okay. And guess what? If he doesn't do it, then they might have Ty France do it. Bring him home. That's where he started his career. And as far as, I mean, Herman Marquez, like, I'm excited to see what kind of changes they can make with him. Walker Buehler, don't care. Like,
I mean, I care because I would not care if he signed with basically any other team. But
they should throw him in the bullpen, dude.
Yeah, but the idea of him pitching against the Dodgers in literally any situation. I know he's now been on a few teams since the Dodgers, so it's not like he went straight. But that's still just an amazing visual that I hope we have at some point, even if it is in the bullpen. And Marquez, I'm so excited because this was a guy that showed real talent at times in Colorado, and last year was just horrific, but also, you know, Rockies, Coors Field. And Ruben Niebla is one of the best. So let's see what he can do with him. If he's healthy, like, it would not shock me if he can be a competent four starter. And I'm excited to see what that looks like. Couple other moves. One move that definitely got my attention, this was last week, at the end of last week, Brewers making a free agent signing Luis Renjifo. And this is just important because after they made the weird Caleb Durbin trade, which also included the two other guys that were on their third base depth chart, we were like, hey, so who's playing third base exactly? Turns out it's going to be Luis Renjifo, who had a horrible season last year. But over the course of his career, like, I think he's been pretty good. I think at times totally he's been kind of underrated. And the Brewers feel like the kind of team that would get the most out of Luis Renjifo, at least if he is healthy. So I kind of like that move. It does not make me feel any better about the Brewers offseason, considering how inactive they were in free agency and making their team better. But this felt like a necessary move, so that makes sense. One other signing that is not as important. There were a few other, you know, Mike Tauchman, whatever. But you know who didn't report Mike Tauchman to the Mets? Me.
Jordan Schusterman.
And I delivered the news. Everyone was wondering all winter, where's Will Brennan going to sign? Don't worry. I got you. On Sunday, I walked in to the Giants clubhouse in the morning and with all the Giants writers. And we're just it's whatever. It's, we're hanging out. It's first day of full squad workouts. We're looking. I had been in there on Thursday, so I'd kind of gotten a sense for like the vibes of who's standing where. Where's Logan Webb? You know, where, whatever.
Sure.
And there was someone in there, and I was like, he wasn't there on Thursday. He was not here last time. And everyone else in the room was also like, he wasn't there last time. Unfortunately for everyone else in the room, including members of the Giants staff.
Incredible.
They didn't know who this person was. However, because I have been in Cleveland for the last few years and have talked to this person many times, I was like, that's Will Brennan. So I look at my phone and I say, and I was like, wait a minute, did Will Brennan sign with the Giants? Like, this could have been something that I missed.
Sure.
Did someone post about this? I was like, no, nothing. There's no one has said anything about this. So I was like, hey, okay, Giants signed Will Brennan. He's wearing a Giants shirt. That's what that means. And then everyone was like, after we got out of clubhouse, all the Giants writers like looked at me like, oh, that's who that was. I was like, yeah, it's Will Brennan. What did surprise me is that this was a major league deal, at least a split deal. Like, but he got a 40-man roster spot. He's coming back from TJ, had another injury last year, so he barely played. And also, frankly, he just wasn't that productive during his time in Cleveland. But boy, do Guardians fans have feelings about this, because when I tweeted this out, I mean, my whole mentions right now are still just a bunch of Guardians fans being like, oh my God, he's gonna rake in San Francisco. And I was like, all right, we'll see about that.
But, I don't know, yeah, if that's
here,
true.
Here we go. I had to respond. That's true. Especially, yeah. I had to respond, though, because you got Miles Michaelis, but this time, you know, here we are. Maybe we are reporters. How about that?
Well, you know what's funny is that this is also kind of how I found out about Miles Michaelis. Someone in Nat's world is like, Miles Michaelis is here? I was like, yeah?
But again, it's the opposite of we talked here. About. Right. There's versions of this often where guys are just like show up in camp and it is not. But like the other spectrum of that is, we talked about it last week, Justin Verlander walking in the Tigers clubhouse. Everyone knows who that is. It's like, okay, well, that
yeah, no one's something.
Like, who's, excuse me, who are you? But Will Brennan is just like the perfect guy for nobody to recognize at all. So
good.
Anyway, there you go.
So good.
And now I will say the last thing on this, and then we got one other bit of WBC news, and then we'll do Scobo. I can't decide if I want Will Brennan to like be amazing, like what, or never play a game for the Giants, which is also completely in play.
Be amazing.
I think we want to be.
You're
amazing.
The beginning
think,
of a yeah. story.
Yeah, yeah.
Of
yeah.
a beautiful
be
story.
Like, you all, when he's an all-star, I'm going to be like, you guys didn't even know who he was.
Know who he? I know. You could write the lead there is great. When Will Brennan walked into the Giants spring training clubhouse for the first time, even members of the staff didn't recognize the. Former Cleveland Guardian. It's easy.
I wanted to shout out. I do want to shout out Sam Henches, another former Guardian who's in the clubhouse there, because he's the one. I was 99.99999% sure that it was Will Brennan, but I was talking to Sam and I was like, "That's Will Brennan, right?" He's like, "Yeah, it is." I was like, "Okay, good." It's like you would know.
Oh, so that's that
you
was
hung
your
out
source.
With this guy too. I guess. I mean, again, like,
don't reveal your sources.
Yeah. There you go. All right. Before we get to Scobo. Roman Anthony, Team USA. Is Roman Anthony going to be hitting? Imagine they talked to Roman. I know they talked to Roman Anthony already. He's replacing Corbin Carroll, who's injured, sadly. It'd be funny if Roman Anthony
if Roman like, yeah, Anthony had said, I'm looking forward to hitting in front of Aaron Judge, that would have been funny and everyone would have laughed and it would have been a joke.
But who knows where Roman Anthony will be in the lineup. But the reality is, like, he's going to start. Right? Like, you look at the outfield and Buxton, you have Buxton, you have PCA, in addition to Judge, Buxton, PCA will be in center, but they don't have another outfielder. I mean, am I wrong? Like, they don't, so he's going to play. So that's really cool. I think he talked about how he went to the finals in 23, like just as a fan, which is very cool. So, I mean, yeah, it's awesome. Roman Anthony
it's
is
two things
someone
on this.
That really matters this year.
This guy becoming a bigger character in our baseball lives beyond the scope of Boston is really good. Alex Bregman apparently was important in making this happen. Like, Bregman went to DeRosa and was like, this is the guy we should have on the team. But the loser here is friend of the program, Vinny Pasquantino, who you know, effectively the captain of Team Italy. I think he actually might be the captain, who during the winter was making all these phone calls and called Roman Anthony and asked him to play for Italy and presumably got the got a no. So Roman Anthony picking U.S. over Italy, I mean, we know where his loyalties lie. I mean, that's tough.
Yeah, couldn't get the guy named Roman to play for Italy is a tough scene.
If you can't get Roman.
Also, like, they're playing USA, right? Like, what what lefty
can you imagine
reliever?
If Italy throws behind, like, throws behind Roman Anthony? Hits him with, like, one of these.
I'm trying to think what lefty reliever, although that's probably bad managing. If that's pretty bad. Although, but again, because they don't really have that many other outfielders, like, he probably is going to face lefties. So that's very interesting. I don't know if, like, Joe La Sorsa is going to dice him up. All right.
Maybe he's a mole.
Let's go.
Maybe
to...
if he goes 0-6 against Italy, he's
so funny.
The fifth column.
All right. Let's do the what is really the grand finale of the Scobo Scobo. The Scott Boras scoreboard. All winter long, we've been tracking whether Scott Boras's activity can be deemed a win, loss, or draw.
Before we begin, before we begin, yes, Jake Mintz and Jordan Schusterman did indeed see the article by Ken Rosenthal at The Athletic with the headline, "What's Next for D-backs and Orioles Plus the Boras Scoreboard and More Notes." Okay. There's three options here. One, Ken Rosenthal listens to every pod and ruthlessly stole our bit. Two, Ken Rosenthal listens to every pod and was doing a hat tip to us. Three, Ken Rosenthal has never listened to a single podcast that we've ever done and has no idea that we do the Scobo Scobo. Jordan, I think it's probably three. And so because there is no ill will here at all, this is fine. What this does tell me is this is a good bit, because if Ken thought of it independently, we're on to something, baby.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the catchy title. The Scobo Scobo.
He didn't think about Scobo Scobo, yeah.
Last time on the Scobo Scobo after the Tarek Skubal arbitration win, his record for the winter was 18 wins, 5 draws, 11 losses, and we have a lot of signings to update. Most notably, the return of Zach Gallen to the Arizona Diamondbacks on a 1-year deal for the same amount of money that is the qualifying offer that he turned down at the start of the offseason, $22.05 million, but also deferred, so it's actually really closer to like $19 million. Zach Gallen, speaking after he re-signed with the Diamondbacks, talking about, of course, he wanted to stay, be comfortable, and he realized the gamble that he was taking by turning down the QO. He recognized that, and once it got to this point in the offseason, he wanted to just go, you know, stick with where he's comfortable, stick where his family has been. All of that is totally reasonable. However, Zach Gallen also gave this quote. Quote, "As players, we're fortunate enough to make the amount of money we do already, so I think getting greedy in that sense was kind of silly. From a human standpoint, this is a wonderfully refreshing perspective for Zach Gallen to have, and I'm sure people really will be like, hey, oh, I like Zach Gallen. That's cool."
I believe that, and Zach Gallen is smarter and more thoughtful than the average baseball player, and I do think that there's an element of truth in that. However, if you believe that to your core's core, you're not hiring Scott Boras as your agent. That's simple.
And to then say something like this publicly is a Boras L, as is this contract.
This is two Boras L's.
I think this is two, because this is not what the Boras mentality is, which again is they're right. They are the best players in the world. They deserve to get what they
sure.
Now, and in this case, because they turned it down and that was a incorrect calculus and you ended up getting not even close. This wasn't even just like a shorter. This is literally the same deal that you turned down except less. It's an L. It happens. It's okay. We hope Zach Gallen is great this year. We enjoy Zach Gallen, but it's two L's. This is just not what Boras probably wants his guys saying out loud. So
Scott Boras does not want any of his clients to ever describe anything as greedy. Like, greedy
exactly.
is not
last
the
word you should be using.
He wants to
use. Ever.
Unless truly. You're like describing an owner, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, right. So,
or taking an extra base in an ill-advised manner. The Tampa Bay Rays signed Nick Martinez. 1 year, $13 million. I think this is a win. Maybe a draw. What do you got on this? This is fine.
Yeah, I think this is a draw. The argument for it being a win is like, he could just be awesome with the Rays and get an even larger deal than this last year, next year.
The reason I think it's a win is if you get the Rays to pay anybody $13 million.
That's a good point. That's a good point. We'll give him a win for that.
The Rays, you were like not really trying to win. Like the Rays traded away a bunch of good players, and they're easily the fifth best team in the division. And so to get $13 million for a guy who, this is a win for me.
That's fair. That's fair. You know, it's not as impressive getting the New York Mets to spend money. The Mets gave MJ Melendez a 1 year, $1.5 million split contract. This one happened before they signed Mike Tauchman to a minor league deal, which in retrospect, the fact that Mike Tauchman, who has been a way better baseball player than MJ Melendez over the last few years, could not get a minor league deal, whereas MJ Melendez does get at least a major league split deal, is compelling, but I don't know. Is this a win for Boris?
This is a win for Boris because this is a good opportunity for his client to win a big league job on opening day. There is a corner outfield spot on the Mets open until Carson Bench gets there, which I could be on opening day, might not be, but there's a real lane here. That being said, I would be shocked if he gets the job. Like, I think this is Mike Tauchman's to lose. With the Mets being, you know, run prevention heavy, I think they'll put Tauchman on the roster. But that's just, again, I don't know. I haven't talked to anybody. That's just my sense. So I think that's a win. Marlins signing Chris Paddock, 1 year, $4 million. Just a draw.
Yeah, I mean, I like, no he'll probably get innings there, but I'm not celebrating that one too much.
White Sox signed Eric Fetty, 1 year, $1.5 million. I think this is a win. We love Eric Fetty. He was awful last year.
He was very bad.
Got him a big league deal.
Having spoke to Eric Fetty 2 days ago and saw how happy he was to be with the White Sox, this is
he loved it there.
He loved it there. And like, he's obviously happy to still have this major league opportunity. And he's been with Boris forever. So it's cool to see him like still have this connection and still get a big league gig. So we love Eric Fetty, and that is a win. I'm glad he's still in the big leagues. Last one, the Red Sox signed Brendan Rodgers, former top pick, to a minor league deal. This is another one where they did it, I think, before they signed IKF and traded for Caleb Durbin and like actually added infielders. So they probably thought there was more of an opportunity in Boston when they did it. That said, it's a minor league deal. And Brendan Rodgers has been a major leaguer. So it's not a loss, but it is definitely not a win.
It is
so
a draw.
I'm going to go with a draw for that. So with all due respect to the Boris clients still out there, including our pal Rhys Hoskins, Max Scherzer, Michael Conforto, Michael Kopech, Joey Gallo, pitcher. This is probably the finale for the Scobo, but we will see.
Sure.
We will leave some room open for some potential additional Boris scoring. But that concludes this latest edition of Scobo. That brings Jordan, his record.
That,
yes.
Yeah, he's 18-5-11.
Yep.
I believe that is 55 points on the table if we're going by soccer standards. Not enough to win the league. I mean, 55 points will put you like right on the edge of Europa League quality.
But now he's 21. 7-13. So 21, okay. 7-13 is really where he's at now. Where does that put him?
So that's 70 points.
Okay.
That's Champions League.
Okay.
70 points last year would have put him in fourth place. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. I feel like Scott Boris has had a better offseason than fourth place, but that can be debated. Thank you for joining me for another edition of the Scobo. We're going to take a break. When we return, we preview a very fun project that we are bringing back to Yahoo in 2026. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, the end of this episode. Let's talk about our young talent rankings. This is a project that we have done for a number of years. And the concept is very simple. I'm sure if you are a baseball internet person, you know about prospect lists and farm system rankings. Many websites, various prognosticators do their best to provide a snapshot of the young, the minor league talent in various organizations. Because there are only two of us and we have like 85 other things that we do on a regular basis, providing scouting reports on every single minor leaguer is just not in our bandwidth. We cannot do that. That is not our bread, nor is it our butter. However, we do the young talent rankings where we rank all 30 organizations by the talent in the organization under the age of 26 big league players included. We believe that this process is a more honest and meaningful snapshot of where an org is at. Because it is arguably more important to have Bobby Witt at the big league level than it is to have Bobby Witt at the minor league level. Actually, that's not arguable. That is a fact.
That said, if you have Connor Griffin, we will reward you for it. If you have the next Bobby Witt Jr., you are also going to rank quite highly on here. A lot that goes into this. This is the fourth year we've done this project. We started at Fox. We brought it to Yahoo. And it's just a really fun exercise. It's just a really good way for us to just canvas rosters and kind of understand where teams are at from a depth standpoint, from a, all right, why is this team going to take a leap into postseason contention? Why is this team maybe going to have the kinds of trade ammo to make a big deal at the deadline? Farm system rankings, again, can get at that. But when you have young players that are succeeding in the majors, it just opens up so many opportunities for other things. It is not the only thing that leads to winning, as we have seen with veteran teams, old teams like the Dodgers and Yankees having a lot of success. But in terms of sustainable operations that are competitive year in and year out, yeah, I know that this sounds like a lot of front office lingo. It's true, but it's also a fun way to just kind of think about players and think about who has players succeeding at a really young age, especially at a time when these players, especially on the position player side, is a higher percentage of the league than ever. I think about 40% of the plate appearances last season in the majors were players age 26 and under. So, which is like up from 29% even 10 years ago. So it's a very relevant part of the player pool. And so we have a lot of fun kind of digging into that. And this week we are revealing the first half of our rankings. We're basically counting down from 30 to 1, five teams at a time. And today, the day that you're listening to this podcast, we're launching the first little chunk, and that is the bottom, the five worst teams, which in this case is going through this process and the scoring system, which again, you can read about our methodology. We don't have to go into that right now. I thought it was pretty clear that these were the five worst teams. This was not a situation where I was hemming and hawing and being like, is this harsh? Like, these five teams at the bottom, Rockies 30, Padres 29, Giants 28, Astros 27, Phillies 26. There's just not a lot here. Whether it's at the minor league level or at the major league level, this is not where teams have a lot of young talent.
Just to fly through them quickly, the Rockies are at the bottom. That's not a huge surprise. If you've been listening to the show, you know that the Rockies before this season were far behind the times. They were an outdated organization that was not adapting to the needs of modern baseball, and the talent in their org has taken a hit as a result. Padres at 29, they would be at 30 if not for Jackson Merrill. And if Jackson Merrill has another underwhelming season, they will almost certainly be at 30 this time next season. It is the worst farm system in the sport. And it's not particularly close. More on the Astros in a second. The Giants are at 28. There's some cool things happening in the lower minors for the Giants. We take that into account a lot less. Bryce Eldridge is the kind of the big guy here. Their top prospect. He has elite power, came up at the end of last year, looked overmatched. Is he a middle-of-the-order force? The bar for first baseman is very high. If he is a two-win player, that's not enough because there's not a whole lot else in the upper minors to, I think, help the current core of Willy Adames and Matt Chapman and Rafael Devers win in the next couple of years. Astros at 27, this farm system, also awful. They're the only organization in baseball to not have a single player ranked in the top 100 of any of the major publications. Not a single player, right? Now, a lot of that is because Astros have been drafting late in the first round, but you know who else drafts late in the first round? The Dodgers. They're pretty dang good at this. This is a reminder that the Astros of 2026 are not the Astros of 2016. This is an organization that was ahead of the curve, and now they're a little bit behind it. Phillies at 26 are interesting because their farm system is pretty good, and they'll have Justin Crawford debuting this year. They'll have Andrew Painter debuting this year. But there's just not a lot of proven commodities at the big league level already that are under 26. Probably fewer than any other organization, unless you're like all in on Otto Kemp, with all due respect to the Ottoman Kempire. Those are teams 30 to 26. Major thoughts on that before we do 25 to 21?
No, I think you summed it up well. I think that it's just, I mean, it is really sharp. And as we work our way up, you'll see why these teams ended up at the bottom, because of just the kinds of major league talent that some of these other teams have, even if it is one or two guys. And I think that's a good transition to 25 to 21, which, you know, we're going to work on writing over the next couple of days. And I would say this is where having one major league anchor is almost single-handedly enough to get you out of the bottom. And especially in relation to someone like Merrill, who had kind of a worse season, you know, 25 to 21, we got the Angels at 25, Blue Jays 24, Twins 23, Rangers 22, Rays 21. The Rays and Rangers we considered very comparable because they have offensive anchors. Junior Caminero on his own is someone that a lot of teams would love to build around. And so that gave him a really strong score in that category. And then Wyatt Langford, same thing. So even though there's not a ton of depth beyond them, and I think particularly on the mound, how little Tampa Bay has at the major league level right now is one of the more shocking things of this entire exercise. I think having someone like Caminero is just more dependably awesome than anything that any team below them has right now. And so there are some interesting pitchers, and like the Angels are really the team that has the most depth because they've rushed all their guys to the majors. There are some really exciting pitchers in this group, like a Trey Savage for sure. Even like a Jack Leiter, I think, could, you know, push his way farther up this ranking next year. But I think just having that offensive anchor just goes such a long way. And that even becomes even more relevant higher up the list.
And the Blue Jays being lower on this list, again, it's not necessarily a reflection of the health of the entire organization. When you spend money on free agents, you lose picks. When you are in contention, you trade prospects away at the deadline, right? And so you're going backwards in that sense, where you're moving forwards at the top. And that's what you're supposed to do. Like, you're supposed to be where the Blue Jays are. And so if you see the Blue Jays low on a list like this, it does not mean you need to run to panic stations. It is interesting where they're next to the Angels, where like if the Angels should be near panic, they should be at their panic stations, settled into their panic stations and panicking, right?
Yeah.
It just shows how, like, we spend a lot of time on this exercise. It's not the be all and end all. It's merely a part of the entire equation.
Yep. And the Angels are a weird one because they do have a lot of guys, and Zach Neto is really good. But when your farm system is this bad, it is. We do want to factor that.
We're
in
also rounding down. We're rounding down.
Oh, for sure.
Because
for sure,
if you look at if you took a guy in the Angel system and you put him in a different system, you'd feel better about it. And that's maybe fair, maybe not, because it's like, I don't believe that the Angels as currently constructed have the operation to make a player better at the same rate, at the same likelihood as most other organizations in the sport.
Yeah. And then that would just be my last point to cap this here. That's also relevant at the bottom. The Padres, Rockies, and Giants all ended up with the same score. But listen, if you're coming off 119 losses, like you're not going to win a tiebreaker in these discussions. I think you can make a real case for the Padres being at the bottom, or even the Giants in some respects. And conversely, the Phillies and Astros have won a lot of baseball games over the last 10 years. And because of that, we are going to kind of default and trust that maybe some of those next young players, whether it is a Crawford, Painter, Aiden Miller, are going to be pretty good. And as bad as the Astros farm systems have been over the last, you know, half decade, they're finding ways to win still. I know they finally missed the postseason, but that is a team that generally is figuring out player development, especially at the major league level. So all of that is to say, we love this project. We hope you go read it. We hope you learn something. We hope you have takes. If you disagree, like, I would love feedback. email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. We'll be rolling those rankings out over the next week. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ingrid Roses for producing this podcast. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for waking up early and podcasting with
me.
I'll be back home on Friday. So I'll be back at my desk on for Friday's episode. I will be here till Thursday. And looking forward to a few more days in the desert. And
dude,
we'll talk
about... I'm itching. Yeah. I'm itching, dude. Like, I'm the Squidward meme.
Yeah.
In the window, looking out at everyone else having fun at spring training.
Yeah.
It has been harder mentally than I expected. And my reaction to that is that I went for an 8-mile run yesterday. Just
run.
Because I needed.
Not even a bike ride.
I just ran Love 8 miles. Just went outside and ran 8 miles. Yeah. I was like, but, I
that's
FOMO.
That's what 8 miles about. 8 miles about Jake wanting to go to Florida for the first time in his life. Just
I figured if I just ran
Florida.
South.
You'll get there eventually. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you later this week. Goodbye.